Hello, I'm Georgina Marshall, Global Head of Research at ISS, and welcome to our preview podcast for the 2020 proxy seasons in Europe and the UK. On this podcast, you'll hear from two of our regional experts about emerging trends, significant regulatory developments, and key ballot items that will impact upcoming proxy seasons in the UK and continental European markets. Of course, the 2020 AGM and voting season is taking place under the enormous shadow of the COVID-19 pandemic. There are so many unknowns right now for millions around the world. We're going to stay focused today on what we know so far about the anticipated impacts on this year's AGMs and on other shareholder voting related issues. We'll cover the latest details that we have in hand. Over the coming weeks and maybe months if needed, we at ISS will continue to provide relevant updates as the pandemic and its many impacts continue to unfold. For example, we're producing and will shortly be providing clients with a review of the main regulatory changes across the world that have so far been announced in relation to AGMs and in response to the unprecedented current situation. Towards the end of this podcast, we'll also offer a look ahead at upcoming AGMs that, assuming they happen, will likely become high-profile meetings over the next few months. Before we begin, let me introduce today's presenters. First, we'll hear from Chris Osborne, Senior Analyst and Deputy Head of our UK research team, who will cover the latest information that we have on the impacts of the pandemic on AGMs in various markets across Europe, including the UK. Then, Agnieszka Walentowicz, a Senior Analyst with our European research team, will join us to discuss what, prior to the pandemic, had been the 2020 proxy season's biggest development in Europe, which is the progress of the second instalment of the Shareholder Rights Directive, or SRD2. Let's get started with Chris. Hi, Chris. From what we know and see so far, what do we currently expect to be the major impacts of the pandemic on AGM seasons in the UK and across Europe?
Hi, Georgina. Well, originally this podcast would have begun with a discussion on the transposition of the updated Shareholder Rights Directive, as well as other important regulatory developments occurring in Europe. Some themes for the season and previews of some meetings to watch. But this preview of European season has, of course, been transformed by the unprecedented impact of the coronavirus pandemic. It is now the primary focus of 2020 AGM season, as the pandemic presents significant obstacles to companies holding their meetings and to investors voting and engagement this season due to the uncertainty that is generated, as well as the drastic social restrictions that are now in place in many countries. The human, social and economic impacts of the pandemic cannot, of course, be overstated. However, it has significantly impacted, already impacted entire industries. Airlines, travel and tourism took the immediate brunt of the economic fallout, but turmoil has moved to the retail, food, hospitality and leisure sectors as countries escalate their social distancing policies, some leading to national lockdowns. All facets of the economy are being impacted by the virus, with associated plunges in world stock markets. However, national responses so far have also been considerable, with many European governments providing loans and providing company wage bills to prevent economic collapse. UK and EU regulators have also introduced measures to provide capital relief for EU banks to allow them to more fully utilise capital and liquidity buffers. Given the rapidly evolving nature of the pandemic and the global response, it is far too early to determine how large the economic fallout will be, and in terms of public companies and the shareholders, what other financial vulnerabilities it covers or exacerbates.
And Chris, what impact do we currently expect the social restrictions and health and safety concerns to have on AGM schedules?
Regarding the 2020 European proxy season, the COVID-19 outbreak is causing many companies to have to rethink their arrangements for their AGMs, with potential bans on large gatherings, travel restrictions, and the risk that meeting venues are closed and no longer available. But the first concern must, of course, be the health and safety of both company and shareholder attendees. Scheduling problems for companies are being exacerbated by the fact that in some jurisdictions, there's a legislative requirement for public companies to hold their AGMs within a specified time period following the financial year end, and that virtual online meetings may require article changes and shareholder approval. In the case of France, Netherlands, Spain and the UK, for example, public companies are expected to hold their AGMs within 6 months of the financial year end, which for many companies will be the end of June. In Italy, which is the epicenter of the region's outbreak at the moment, AGMs should be held within 4 months of the financial year end, although this can be extended to 6 months in exceptional circumstances. In Austria and Germany, AGMs should be called within 8 months of the financial year end.
And many of these deadlines for meetings clearly don't look feasible at this point. Have there been any governmental actions to ease these burdens yet?
Yes, so given the rapidly developing situation, we've seen some actions already, and it's likely that further emergency legislation will be passed in many jurisdictions that will either extend statutory deadlines for holding AGMs or grant companies the ability to hold virtual-only meetings, especially where governments have legislated to impose restrictions on public gatherings. There are already too many different actions across Europe to cover in this podcast. So as you noted in your introduction, I'll just highlight that ISS will shortly be making available a document with a summary of the main regulatory changes around the world as we are aware of them now. At the current time, the majority of European companies still appear to be going ahead with their planned AGMs, although we're seeing a growing number of meetings being either adjourned or cancelled. Generally, shareholders are being encouraged to vote by proxy. As previously noted, because governments are imposing nationwide lockdowns, restricting the movements of their citizens or prohibiting gatherings, it's becoming increasingly likely that many physical meetings will not be viable. Shareholders have been recommended to check company websites and regulatory news services for AGM updates, where notices have already been sent out or in the process of being dispatched. And of course, we at ISS will be notifying clients through the proxy exchange platform when any changes are made to meeting dates. In terms of the format of meetings that go ahead, some companies are already issuing notifications that meetings will not be held in the same format. Any meetings held are unlikely to be shorter in duration, or as any presentations by the chair and other members of the board will be kept to a minimum, or perhaps increasingly likely, they will be replaced by webcasts and board members perhaps attending by video link. Meeting venues may also be subject to change. Alternatively, companies may choose to postpone their meeting. However, the ability to postpone a meeting in some jurisdictions may be dependent on a company's constitutional documents permitting such action. In addition, given requirements to hold an AGM within a fixed time period after the financial year end, postponements may be a limited option anyway if the pandemic restrictions continue, as currently seems increasingly likely. Similar regulatory restrictions may arise in the case of AGM adjournments. The ability to adjourn a meeting would be of limited value if there is a risk that the reconvened AGM could not be held before any reporting deadline. In addition, the ability to adjourn a meeting is normally dependent on a company's constitutional documents. In some jurisdictions, the chair of the meeting can adjourn in certain circumstances. In other markets, local rules may first require a physical meeting to be opened with necessary quorum requirements met before the meeting can then be adjourned to a later date. But in the case of either postponement or adjournment, there may be implications for the resolutions to be proposed at the AGM. So some resolutions commonly passed at AGMs, such as share allotment and disapplication authorities and buyback authorities, they're drafted to expire at the following AGM, or commonly 15 to 18 months following the AGM. So if the 2020 AGM cannot be held until the expiry of the previous authority granted the 2019 AGM, the company may not have any valid authority in these time-sensitive matters.
And to what extent are virtual-only meetings a viable option for companies in the region?
So barring legal changes, the answer is generally no, they're not a viable option. Only a small minority of companies currently have articles that allow them to hold general meetings that are entirely electronic. Such virtual-only meetings are relatively rare in Europe. Critics have raised concerns in the past, and in more normal times, that virtual meetings may not allow shareholders an adequate opportunity to question the board or engage directly with management and to hear the views of other shareholders. In the UK, for example, standard practice and investor guidance recommends that a physical place of meeting should always be provided. Taking this into consideration, some companies have already amended their articles to allow for shareholders to take part in meetings using electronic means, as well as providing a physical place of meeting for those who prefer to attend in person. Such hybrid meetings are unusual in practice, but some companies are at least able to hold them if they wish. However, it remains to be seen how companies who have not yet sought shareholder approval to hold hybrid meetings will be able to convene such meetings unless emergency legislation is passed.
And when meetings are held, what impacts will the pandemic be likely to have on agenda items?
So given the significant and sudden impact that COVID-19 is having on many companies' revenue streams, it is also likely that the circumstances have significantly altered since the end of the financial year end. So in many instances, since they issued the notice of meeting for convening their AGM. As such, many companies will be keeping their financial position under close review, and some are already reconsidering whether it remains appropriate for the board to recommend a final dividend at the AGM. In some European jurisdictions, the passing of a final dividend resolution at a company's AGM creates a legally enforceable debt obligation on the company at the time at which the resolution is passed. So if between the date of publication of the AGM notice and the date of the AGM, the board therefore becomes concerned that it would not be prudent to pay a dividend at that time, the board could seek a motion to withdraw the resolution at the AGM. Some companies may also seek to pay interim dividends at a later date. At this time, we're already seeing instances of companies dropping the final dividend resolution from the AGM agendas, with examples including British companies Micro Focus International, Chris Nicholson Holdings, and Swedish company Cloetta. Other companies that have either yet to issue their meeting agendas or stated that they will update their agendas have begun to announce that final dividends will either be suspended, reviewed, or reduced in 2020. Examples include ITV, Marks & Spencer Group, Intercontinental Hotels Group, and Europcar Car Mobility Group. Similarly, Royal Dutch Shell PLC has recently announced that it's suspended its share buyback program following similar measures by Italy's Norway's Equinor, and France's Total. Major capital spending reductions have also been announced at these companies.
Thanks, Chris. So some potentially pretty significant impacts for both companies and their shareholders around the meetings themselves and on dividend proposals potentially. And will we see any likely impact on remuneration votes, do you think?
So as with previous seasons, executive remuneration is likely to prove a highly controversial subject in 2020, especially given newly introduced European Union requirements to hold say on pay-related resolutions at companies' AGMs, following the transposition of the revised Shareholder Rights Directive into the national laws of EU member states. So the impact of COVID-19 adds an additional level of complexity to the normal remuneration discussions, given the likelihood that many in-flight bonus and LTIP awards are likely to have been negatively affected, with performance targets perhaps no longer deemed feasible. However, there may not be much shareholder sympathy for companies that propose relaxing executive performance targets for in-flight bonus and long-term incentives, especially given the recent shareholder experience, concerns over the economy and a company's financial stability, and considerations for the welfare of the wider workforce. The appropriate use of remuneration committee discretion to override the formulaic outcomes of incentive pay plans to ensure the alignment of pay with performance and the shareholder experience is increasingly expected by institutional shareholders. Many shareholders, whilst likely to be extremely sympathetic to companies navigating their businesses through the current crisis and uncertainties, are also still likely to pay close attention to a company's response to COVID-19 and how it manages executive pay through the period. It's also worth noting that some companies have already announced measures to reduce their top executives' remuneration in response to the pandemic. So Executive Chair Ana Botín and CEO José Antonio Álvarez at Spanish bank Santander, both donating half their pay to a medical equipment fund. Directors at UK company Stagecoach have announced that they've chosen to reduce their pay by 50% or forego any bonuses this year to help offset the impact of COVID-19. Similarly, Intercontinental Hotels Group have announced substantial decreases in executive compensation following the announcement that the final dividend will be cancelled in 2020 in light of the pandemic. And it's expected that more companies will adopt similar measures over the next few months.
Thanks, Chris. And are there any other impacts that you expect to see this year?
Yes, so one further consideration of COVID-19's effects on proxy season is the additional reporting challenges that it poses for the auditing and finalising of financial accounts. The global travel restrictions and national lockdowns currently in effect will make it difficult for many auditors to complete their audits, especially in companies with a global footprint, where issues in gaining access to the company's various sites will make it difficult to gather audit evidence. In addition, because of the rapid impact the pandemic has had on many businesses, some entities that were previously deemed to be going concerns may no longer be. Furthermore, even companies that continue to be going concerns may now face many material uncertainties in the future. Auditors will need to consider the adequacy of disclosures made by management about the likely impact of the pandemic on the company. And it's highly likely that auditors will need to reassess key aspects of the audit because of the fast-changing situation. An inability for auditors to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence is likely to result in an increased number of qualified opinions over the course of 2020. Given these additional considerations, some companies may require additional time to fulfill their financial reporting obligations, which may lead to a delay in the publication of report and accounts and the accompanying AGM. As suggested earlier, this may lead to emergency national legislation being passed to extend reporting deadlines. Just a few days ago, on the 25th of March, Companies House in the UK announced that UK companies could apply for a three-month extension for filing their report and accounts, and it's expected that a similar extension to their accompanying AGM may also soon be confirmed. it is likely that similar allowances will be put into effect across Europe where they haven't already.
Thanks, Chris. There's certainly a lot for both companies and their shareholders to consider and contend with this year, and many uncertainties. Now let's bring Agnieszka into the discussion for a status report on a different topic, the updated Shareholder Rights Directive. Agnieszka, SRD2 was supposed to be the big story this season, and it's still proceeding, even though, of course, vastly overshadowed now by the pandemic. Can you give listeners a quick recap of SRD2 and then cover what will be the major impacts this year?
The second Shareholders' Rights Directive updates the 2007 Shareholders' Rights Directive and aims to reinforce improved long-term engagement between shareholders and the companies in which they invest, as well as monitoring company performance. It amends its predecessor by introducing new chapters focused on three areas: the voting chain, transparency, as well as director remuneration and related party transactions. The 10th of June 2019 was the deadline for transposition into the EU member states' legislations of SRD2.
And let's break down each of these new chapters. What are the changes with respect to the voting chain?
The new requirements focus on identification of shareholders, transmission of information, and facilitation of shareholders' rights. Issuers will be now allowed to request the identification of shareholders who hold more than a certain percentage of shares or voting rights, and such a percentage shall not exceed 0.5%. Secondly, intermediaries are required to transmit information without delay, in compliance with issuer deadlines and record dates, and in electronic and machine-readable formats. And lastly, intermediaries should also transmit voting instructions without delay in accordance with record dates and issuer deadlines. In most of the countries, amendments concerning the voting chain will come into force in the second half of 2020.
And what are the changes with respect to transparency?
Institutional investors are now required to disclose their engagement policies on an annual basis, making them available on their websites. And proxy advisors should annually publish on their websites a reference to a code of conduct which they apply and reports on the application of that code.
Which we at ISS will be doing, of course. And what are the changes related to remuneration and related party transactions?
The directive grants shareholders the ability to vote on a company's remuneration policy and remuneration report. The vote on the remuneration policy will be held at least every 4 years and annually in the case of the remuneration report. The EU member states can choose whether these votes will be binding or advisory. As of today, most EU members that have transposed the directive have opted for a binding vote on the remuneration policy and advisory vote on remuneration report. In some European countries, including France, Italy, the UK, shareholder approval of the remuneration policy and report have been AGM agenda items for many years. In others, such as Eastern European markets, Germany, and some Nordic markets, these represent new requirements. In addition, SRD2 sets out rules on transparency and approval process of related party transactions. It provides for approval of related party transactions by general meeting, except for related party transactions concluded in the ordinary course of business and under normal market conditions. However, out of 21 EU member states that have transposed the directive, only 7 of them decided that such transactions will be subject to general meeting approval. These markets are Czech Republic, Finland, France, Ireland, Italy, Slovakia, and Sweden. In all other markets, such transactions will be approved either by management board or supervisory board.
Okay, very interesting. And are some markets making changes to their corporate governance codes also to be in line with the transpositions?
Yes, several European countries, including Germany, France, Italy, the UK, Spain and Croatia, amended their corporate governance codes to, among others, bring them in line with SRD2 provisions. Most of the changes intend to align directors' pay with company performance and enhance transparency. In Germany, for example, a new governance code stipulates that supervisory board will determine the maximum remuneration for management board members. This may be reduced later by the general meeting. The code also introduces a list of recommendations relating to the independence of supervisory board members, and it addresses concerns with overboarding by restricting the number of supervisory board mandates to 5 in non-group listed companies. Following transposition of SRD II, an advisory vote on a company's remuneration policy will become mandatory in 2021 at the earliest, and an advisory vote on the remuneration report in 2022. In France, the amended code introduces new rules regarding pay ratio between the salaries of company officers and the average and median salaries of employees over the previous 5 years. The code recommends using the different group companies in France and considers a minimum 80% of the group's French employees to represent a suitable base for calculation. The code also provides recommendations for a gender diversity policy for upper management. Such a policy will be approved by the board of directors and will include specific objectives and checkpoints. In addition, the amended framework resulting from the transposition of SRD II in French law creates a new binding remuneration report item to vote on. This includes all remuneration paid to the executive and non-executive corporate officers during the year under review, as well as additional disclosures, such as the CEO to employee pay ratio and 5-year comparison of pay and performance. Should this proposal not be approved at the AGM, payments under the remuneration policy applicable for the current year are suspended until a revised remuneration policy is approved. So in France, shareholders will still have a vote on the remuneration policy regarding the CEO and vice CEO, but will also now approve the remuneration policy of the board of directors and chair. In Spain, the new governance code limits termination payments to 2 years of total remuneration. It also provides for increase in the percentage of women on boards from 30% to 40% and enhances control measures by the board, especially in corruption cases. In the UK, 2020 marks the first time that UK-listed companies with a reporting year commencing on the 1st of January 2019 or later will be required to report against their application of the updated 2018 Corporate Governance Code. According to the code, the pension contribution rates for executive directors should be aligned with those of the workforce. Additionally, remuneration schemes should encourage long-term shareholdings by executive directors that support alignment with long-term shareholder interests. To ensure that, share awards granted should be released for a sale on a phased basis and be subject to a total vesting and holding period of 5 years or more.
And what impact do you anticipate that SRD II will have on AGMs this year?
Until now, 21 EU member states had implemented SRD II into their local legislations. Implementation of SRD II will likely have the biggest impact in the countries where, until now, shareholders encountered limited transparency and where remuneration of directors or details of significant transactions were not disclosed. This is the case for many Eastern European countries, where transposition of the directive may contribute to improvement of corporate governance standards. The Eastern European season will start in just a few weeks, and this is where we will know how the companies will adapt to those new requirements. It will be interesting to see what level of disclosure will be provided by issuers and if it meets investors' expectations.
Thanks, Agnieszka. And moving to some significant upcoming meetings now. What significant meetings are on your radar screen for Europe in 2020, assuming they happen as scheduled?
I have two meetings for shareholders to watch. The first one is Bayer, whose AGM is scheduled for the 28th of April. In March, the company agreed on draft settlement terms with six law firms representing tens of thousands of plaintiffs who have sued Bayer claiming that the company's Roundup weed killer causes cancer. According to the media reports, total payment of compensation may amount to $10 billion. Also, just a few weeks ago, a California shareholder of Bayer, the Constantin Haussmann Trust, filed a lawsuit against the company's top executives, including the company's CEO, Werner Baumann, and accused them of breaching their duty of prudence and loyalty to the company and investors by buying Monsanto, the manufacturer of Roundup, in 2018. Bayer finalized the Monsanto purchase deal only 2 months before the first Roundup cancer trial ended with a $289 million US dollars verdict against the company. During last year's AGM, more than 55% of shareholders voted against the discharge of the management board and 44% against the discharge of the supervisory board. As such, the company's CEO became the first CEO in Germany to lose a confidence vote by shareholders. This year's meeting promises to be equally interesting. And the other meeting that I would like to mention today is that of Airbus, scheduled for the 16th of April. On the 28th of January this year, US, UK and French authorities concluded their investigations into the company. The inquiries concerned several suspicions of irregularities, including allegations of fraud, bribery and corruption committed in the civil aviation business of Airbus. According to the allegations, Airbus used intermediaries to bribe officials to win contracts for the company in 20 countries over a 13-year period. Total settlements that Airbus reached with the US, UK and French authorities amount to 3.6 billion euro. Because of these agreements, the company admitted to several counts of corruption and bribery, such as sponsoring a sports team for $50 million owned by Air Asia executives, or paying $2 million to the wife of a Sri Lankan Airways purchasing manager. Over the years, the company took a number of remedy actions and cooperated with prosecutors. During the upcoming AGM, we will see whether shareholders will consider that those measures sufficiently mitigate concerns over the serious shortcomings in the board compliance and internal control functions and the substantial monetary cost and reputational damage that the company faces because of these settlements.
Thanks, Agnieszka. And Chris, I hear you also have a sneak peek for some UK meetings as well.
Yeah, that's right, Georgina. So Barclays AGM is scheduled for 7th of May, and it's interesting because of a proposed shareholder resolution relating to climate change. So in December 2019, the charity ShareAction, along with 11 institutional investors and 131 individual investors, filed a shareholder resolution asking the company to set and disclose targets to phase out the provision of financial services to the energy sector and electronic and gas utility companies that are not aligned with the goals of the Paris Climate Agreement. So until now, similar climate-related shareholder proposals have largely focused their efforts for alignment with the goals of the Paris Agreement on big oil and gas companies responsible for producing fossil fuels, with prior year resolutions at companies including Royal Dutch Shell and BP. The Barclays resolution will mark the first time a large European bank has faced such shareholder action on fossil fuels financing and reflects rising shareholder concerns regarding companies' responses to climate change risk. The resolution is expected to represent a useful gauge for indicating shareholder appetite for future climate risk resolutions at a range of companies not traditionally targeted to respond to their alignment with the Paris Agreement. In addition to BP, I wanted to highlight that a number of companies are expected to put forward restricted share pay plans for shareholder approval during the 2020 AGM season, including Lloyds Banking Group and UK telecoms giant BT. Restricted share plans have grown in popularity over the last 4 years, with notable examples including Weir Group and Whitbread. However, they remain relatively few in number and have proved divisive with shareholders, primarily due to their increased certainty of payout and debate about whether they form an effective retention tool, with most companies still preferring more traditional performance-based share plans. However, given the size and profile of Lloyds and BT, it will be interesting to see the level of shareholder support the proposed plans achieve, and whether this will promote an increased take-up of the restricted share plan pay model at other FTSE all-share companies in the future. ISS will continue to assess such plans on a case-by-case basis. However, the main themes of the season will be how companies react to COVID-19, given the plethora of current uncertainties and the pandemic's impact on meeting agendas. ISS will continue to keep clients updated on the changes to company meetings and agendas over the coming months.
Thanks, Chris. And that ends our European Preview podcast. Thanks to both our speakers, Agnieszka and Chris, and thank you for listening. We hope that you found this podcast useful and informative. Please watch your emails over the course of the coming weeks for information on and links to this season's podcast series, particularly as global events and impacts of the coronavirus continue to unfold. From all of us at ISS, thanks again for joining us, and please stay safe and secure.